sector will take on 750 apprentices each year by 2025, and employers who recruit apprentices will be able to apply for an annual grant of €3,000 from next year. The measures are included in a plan published today by the Minister for Higher Education, Simon Harris, aimed at generating up to 10,000 apprenticeships within the next 3 years. The range of apprenticeships will be expanded with new roles in healthcare, the green economy and farming. A national apprenticeship office will be created, along with a portal for school leavers interested in registering to become an apprentice. We'll speak to Minister Simon Harris in just a few minutes. But first, our reporter Cian McCormack on the challenge faced at the moment by those trying to secure an apprenticeship.
We would have approximately 200 electrical contractors throughout Ireland and all the counties.
Chris Lundy is the Executive Secretary of the Association of Electrical Contractors Ireland, AECI.
There would be approximately 9,000 electrical apprentices in the country.
He's sceptical about the government's five-year plan to have 10,000 apprentices a year. He says an existing backlog in apprenticeship completions needs to be tackled immediately. Those apprenticeships involve 208 weeks work experience and 7 phases of college education.
I do shudder because there are major problems in terms of getting what we have already through these phases and getting these guys qualified to go out into the world. Everything is at a standstill, Cian. Everything is stopped. So some of those would be waiting on phase 2, some waiting on phase 3, phase 4, phase 6. They'd be waiting in various phases.
The impact of the apprenticeship logjam is very real for contractors like Seamus Byrne Electrical in County Carlow, which has 15 apprentices. Des Keogh is its operations manager.
Well, sure, look, it's knocking out their whole schedule. And like an apprentice now would normally would be 208 weeks with the employer. This could turn into now maybe 5-6 years of an apprenticeship with an employer. And it has a knock-on effect of maybe taking on more apprentices.
22-year-old Rory Doyle is one of the apprentices.
Well, I was due to go to phase 4 last April, and I still haven't gone yet because of the lockdown. So I'm probably at least a year behind. It impacts me everywhere because I won't qualify as soon as I should be. Like, I should be hopefully fully qualified this September, like, but that's not going to happen now. So then if you're not fully qualified, like, you're not going to get the electrician's rate, like, so that's going to affect your money as well, like, you know.
Solace says it's tackling the backlog, but it doesn't have the exact figures on exactly how big it is. Mary Liz Trant is an executive director with Solace. There are 20,000 apprentices at the moment. 3,000 have come back into the system. 1,500 are coming back into the system soon. But how big is that logjam?
So the numbers that we're focused on and we're really working on to get rid of those backlogs are those apprentices who are due to, you know, come out of their workplace, go into an education and training board or an institute of technology or a technological university and complete their off-the-job training. And they were the ones that were badly affected last year and into this year because of COVID. That 20 million additional funding, you know, which has been announced by the minister to, you know, for additional capacity, that is focused, and we've started working on that already with all of the colleges to get additional workshops in, additional numbers back. We have been operating at 50% capacity because of social distancing, 2 meter requirements. We're hoping that with the vaccinations, that restriction will lift. And we'll be back to 100% apprentices in workshops. And we, you know, and that's the number one priority for the rest of this year.
Mary Liz Trant says what's been announced today helps address gender imbalance.
We've over 1,000 female apprentices now this year for the first time. You know, those numbers were tiny a few years ago. But it's as I mentioned, we've 20,000 apprentices, 1,000 of them are women. We still have a long way to go.
Connect Trade Union is the largest engineering union in Ireland. Its Assistant General Secretary Brian Nolan is giving today's announcement a cautious welcome.
Well, you'd have to cautiously welcome a move to increase the apprenticeship numbers and hope that within those new figures published today that they would go some way to address gender imbalance within the crafts in particular. We would say that whatever road this takes, it cannot erode the gold standard system that we currently have here that's recognised worldwide as a top-class apprenticeship system.
Increasing the number of apprentices training in the public sector, you're welcoming this, I assume.
Absolutely. I mean, it's one sector that has for a long time missed out on the apprenticeship model.
Well, let's talk now to the Minister for Higher Education, Research, Innovation and Science. Simon Harris is on the line. A very good afternoon, Minister, and thanks for talking to us on the programme.
Good afternoon.
It sounds, listening to Kim McCormack's report there, that the priority needs to be dealing with the existing young people who are in the system, who, because of various delays, are finding that their qualification has been put back and back and back, and that needs to be a priority.
Well, that's an absolute priority, and that's why €20 million of additional funding has been allocated to tackle that backlog. I mean, COVID has had an extraordinary impact on the delivery of education and indeed the delivery of work placements, and I'm very satisfied with the plan that Sulis now have in place and the extra funding that we've provided, that backlog will be worked through and will be eliminated over the course of 2022. But it's not good enough for a minister or a government to just deal with a backlog. We've got to be much more ambitious than that, Brian. We live in a country where there has been an elitist, snobby and narrow attitude to higher education. And we've really, really got to break that down. There are so many different ways for young people and not so young people to get to where they want to get to in life. Apprenticeship is a worthy way. And that's why we want to launch this plan today. We want to be very ambitious in terms of the scale of our ambition. We want to get to 10,000 registered apprentices by 2025 every year, and everyone has a role to play. So the plan today is providing financial assistance for business, providing extra supports for female participation, but it's also making the public sector step up and not just lecture the business community.
But if the system,
every
minister,
county council, government department, state agency has a role to play here in providing opportunities.
But if minister, the system is struggling to deliver to complete apprenticeships for those already in the system, how is it going to meet these very ambitious targets which you've set in this plan?
So the system is not struggling, I suppose. The system is only encountering a COVID difficulty, which will be worked through. In general, the system of apprenticeships in Ireland has really come on in leaps and bounds in recent years. We've seen massive increases. Now, there's no doubt COVID has had an impact. It would be silly to suggest anything else. But we're going to get through that. And what I want to be ready to do is make sure that when we are through the COVID pandemic, and we will, and there'll be life beyond COVID, that our higher education system is ready to respond, is more diverse and provides more pathways. And this is a 5-year plan. There are actions we will take each and every year to get to that 10,000 figure. And as I say, we'll do it through a variety of ways. We'll do it through reforming the CAO so young people can see all of their options. We'll do it through supporting businesses financially so that it's easier for them to take on apprentices. And we'll also do it by the public sector playing its part and targets being set for the public sector to hire 750 apprentices each year.
And what about particularly opportunities for young women in all of this? We heard the figures there, 1,000 out of 20,000 currently apprentices are young women. What can and will be done to try and raise that number?
Quite extraordinary, Brian. I got a briefing note a couple of weeks ago and it said that there were 23 female apprentices in Ireland in 2015. I genuinely thought it was a typo with at least one zero missing. We now have the figure up to just over 1,000, but we do need to actually positively discriminate. So in addition to the support that we will provide businesses, the core grant for taking on any apprentice, we will provide additional funding if you take on a female apprentice in an area where you've 80% male apprentices today. I think that will make a difference. The second thing we're going to do, though, as well, we need to make sure that younger women in school are being given all of the information and options around apprenticeships. I've engaged with a lot of female apprentices over the last while, and they often tell me that they weren't maybe made aware of apprentices at a younger age. So we'll be sitting down now with female apprentices as well to set specific targets. So a financial incentive being part of it, but also greater visibility being another part.
You've mentioned the impact of COVID on all of this, and it's also having an impact elsewhere in the third level education sector, in the universities, we know. And particularly in relation to bringing overseas students into our universities for the next academic year. I mean, they're very concerned, I think you understand, the impact of mandatory hotel quarantining on their plans in that regard. And one way out of that, we're told, is this EU vaccine passport. But at the same time, the government appears to be reluctant to fully back that initiative. It wants it delayed. Is that the case?
Well, can I just say on overseas students coming to Ireland, I mean, I'm very optimistic about this for two reasons. One, the mandatory hotel quarantine legislation that we have in place expires this summer. So, I mean, mandatory hotel quarantine should not be even a medium-term policy objective. It's a short measure that we need to have in place while we get on top of variants and vaccines. The second reason I'm very optimistic is the common sense change that was brought about last week that you'll have heard me talk about in relation to vaccinated people not having to go to mandatory hotel quarantine. So if you look, for example, in the United States at the moment, where many of our overseas students would come from, you have a situation there where many student-aged people are already vaccinated, and certainly many more will be by the time September comes about. So while Ireland will be working its way through the whole issue of the vaccine cert that you talked to, from an actual university point of view, I'm extremely optimistic about the coming academic year, not just for international students, but actually for getting all students back to campus. Because between rapid testing and the vaccine program, I think we can look forward to a much brighter college year.
We're seeing infection rates fall, ICU numbers in hospital coming down, the vaccination program is proceeding. Is it time to look at bringing forward some of the plans to reopen society, to accelerate that process?
Possibly, but it's also time, I think, to take stock of exactly where we're at. So as you say, things are going very well at the moment. I haven't been as optimistic about where we're at with COVID-19 in many months. It's hard to find a metric not going in the right direction, and that's really, really positive. But we also know that the vaccines are providing huge, huge protection, and we don't want to fall at the final hurdle now, because literally over the next number of weeks, and we are talking weeks, 4 out of 5 adults in Ireland are going to have had their first vaccine. So next week, the government will meet and it will consider the easing of restrictions. I hope we'll do more than just the month of May. I think we're duty bound to try and provide as much clarity as we can for May, June and July. We've already indicated that May will look at things like retail, we'll look at things like personal services, hairdressers, barbers and the likes, and we'll also look at the resumption of the remaining construction activity. So they'll be the first priorities. But certainly my gut on this is that so far the easing of restrictions has gone well. The evidence suggests that as well. And I think people are, you know, I think people have learned a lot about how to safely live alongside the virus.
So we have this
let's
much
try
more
and set out a roadmap for the coming weeks.
All right. So we have this much more hopeful, optimistic outlook. And yet at the same time, we'll be talking about this a little bit later, we have this new statutory instrument last week, in effect outlawing, making it a criminal offence to attend a religious service and other public gatherings as well. Why is this happening at this stage? Why is it necessary to bring this in now when in the case of public worship, there have been so few breaches of the rules?
Well, I can only presume that the Minister for Health must have taken legal advice or indeed in relation to that. But I mean, my own view, and I'm sure the view of everybody in government, is that we want to see the resumption of religious services as a priority. I mean, religious freedom is something I take extraordinarily seriously. Everybody has a right to practice their faith. Obviously, we've been taking measures. And I remember during the earlier stages of the pandemic, my engagement with the churches, we'd taken measures to try and keep congregations safe and to try and keep those priests.
But why this much tougher legal framework in place at this particular point, right, as we're beginning to see that light at the end of the tunnel?
What I would say is this, Brian. I mean, we're going to sit down next week and we're going to look at May, June, and I hope July. And I think all of those things can be looked at in the context. I mean, the pandemic has never been about, it's always been about working with people. It's laws are always things that should be there as a last resort. And I know that everybody in government is very conscious of religious freedom and would like to see the resumption of religious services as soon as it is possibly safe to do so. Religion is a major part of many people's lives.
Can I just finally, one or two other matters. We had this report of the weekend, on the This Week programme actually yesterday here on RTE, a complaint made to Dublin City University by the Georgian and Ukrainian embassies. Now, without going into the detail on this, suffice it to say it was over a course they were teaching on post-Soviet Russia, flatly rejected by the university, described by these embassies as disinformation and Russian propaganda. What's your response to this?
So whilst I'm not across all of the detail of it, because obviously the universities are autonomous, I stand full square behind Dublin City University in terms of academic independence. You know, I don't think it's for politicians or geopolitics to in any way get in the way or interfere with academic freedoms. My understanding is a very expert lecturer is delivering that course in a wonderful university that is DCU. And I think any attempt to interfere in relation to that would be most unwelcome.
Just finally, Minister, I see from today's Irish Daily Mail that you've been offered what they describe or have taken up what they describe as a poison chalice. This is taking charge of a commission into young Fine Gael. John Drennan, who writes the piece, says, and I quote, one Varadkar supporter within Fine Gael noted, that's a lovely little poison chalice Leo gave Simon. Stopping that lot sticking scissors into each other will keep him busy. Is that going to be your task with young Fine Gael?
I hadn't seen that, but firstly, I can assure you I am very very busy. Secondly, I can assure you, when people appointed me to the Department of Health, they thought that was a poison chalice, and I worked very hard in that area and enjoyed that role very much. So, look, I think it's so important that we look at ways we can get young people involved in politics, be that through political party membership, but also actually just through public discourse. And I'm really excited about playing that role, and delighted that the Tánaiste has asked me to head up that new commission.
Very good.
There's going to be a huge body of work to rebuild Ireland and to reimagine what our country can look like post-COVID. And I'm looking forward to applying some energy to that task.
Very good. Minister for Higher Education, Simon Harris, thanks for talking to us on the programme.